Over the last months, there's been unprecedented mobilizations in support of Palestinian human rights around the world, and also mobilizations that are calling for people to boycott the Israeli government due to their consistent violations of Palestinian human rights that are well documented by many human rights organizations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International. And this is an interesting opportunity to hear what people are organizing in different contexts, in the cultural sphere, in the academic sphere, in the community sector, within labor unions. Both of you are involved in the context of Belgium, and this has been an important point of mobilization in the European context. So it'd be great to hear both of your experiences and a bit about what you do. So please go ahead.
Well, so we are both affiliated to the VUB, so the Flemish University in Brussels. And it has been quite interesting because before this attack, actually, there hasn't been really an organization or some type of gathering of academics working on the topic or just interested in showing their solidarity for Palestine. So in that sense, our first, actually, the first thing that was organized from the VUB was the VUB calls for a ceasefire, in which we were able to get about 300 staff and students all together to call for an immediate ceasefire. That was back in November, so November the 13th. And since then, many people have joined the group, and we can now proudly say, I think, that we have a VUB Palestine Solidarity Network, through which we are organizing teach-ins, so lectures. We bring Palestinians that can bring their testimonies, that have their family in Gaza or live in Europe or elsewhere, and can't go back to Palestine. So it has really been, I think, a very interesting and emotionally touching also journey these past weeks, honestly. Because I personally really felt like I couldn't do more than go to protests, for example. But then the fact that you can create this network, that you have these people around you, that you can provide a platform for Palestinians, that you see that people really get something from it, it really warms up my heart, and I feel like I can at least do something. But of course, you still feel that it's not enough. And I think that's everyone has that feeling. So I am Shehan Sliti. I am a political science PhD researcher at the VUB. I myself am half Moroccan, half Tunisian, but I'm born and raised here in Belgium. So of course, as a Muslima, as a Tunisian, with my Tunisian and Moroccan roots, I feel also really connected to the Palestinian struggle. I've been to protests since I was a child. My father used to take me. So it's like this endless going to protests and then reading about it and then crying about it. And then just like nothing happens anymore. And then you have again these attacks on Palestinians and you're again in this roller coaster, emotional roller coaster. And I think it's the first time in my life where I can really have a feeling like, okay, I'm doing more than what I used to do, more than just going out in the streets, but really trying to bring a change at a university by trying to get a university to boycott their links and their partnerships with Israeli institutions.
I am Jouke Huizer, and I was born and raised in the Netherlands. And I also studied there, so I actually moved to Brussels 6 years ago to work at the university and to pursue a PhD. And I had quite an opposite upbringing, in fact. I know within my family, some people were engaged with a Palestinian cause who are actually at first Israel supporters, but then switched because they said this is not conforming our principles. But for most of my youth, there was not really an urgency to really engage with the Palestinian cause. And it was, I think a lot of white people like me have this, that why is this conflict absorbing so much attention? There's more going wrong in the world, etc., etc., etc. And then only when you engage with that, and I think a lot of people like me, they don't really feel the need to engage with that. You see the injustice and you see what's going wrong and you see like, okay, we cannot be silent. And then not to take false credit, I think there has been some mobilization going on in 2014 already. There was a boycott movement within the university together with the artistic sector. And then in 2021, there was also an attempt to do something of a boycott by some of our colleagues. It wasn't that institutionalized, so to say. The first thing, well, it has a website. It doesn't look very fancy. It's named Buckby. But I mean, there were quite some efforts already. And I think now that it's really, well, there's a lot of momentum and I hope we can continue it and that we can establish something that will really work towards a more durable support system, solidarity system, so that we can undo the colonial project and the situation, the occupation, and well, now most pressing, the genocide that is going on.
Although at the VUB, it's true that in the past there have been some things, but there wasn't really this network or people that really try to continue on building something. That is something that we have seen in other universities like UGent, where they have these groups that I feel are much less present at the VUB and which we are trying to change with a lot of other colleagues and students also who are very mobilized for the cause.
The protests in Brussels have been major. I was fortunate to join one recently, and it was really impressive. And you could see also the very strong community mobilization and many different types of people, families. Maybe just we'll get back to the work at the university, but can you describe what's been happening in Brussels over the last month? Because more than 1 month now, it's been pretty incredible, the amount of demonstrations and mobilization in the city.
It took more than over a week before there was a clear big or major organized protest in Brussels. But one of the benefits of living in Brussels is that you also live in the capital of Europe and in the capital of Belgium, of course. And well, what struck me a lot in this protest or in this escalation was that Europe was so clearly on the wrong side of history. And it reminded me a lot of the Iraq war, where Europe, or most countries in Europe, were still very critical of the US. And this time it was totally the other way around. Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, went to Israel, to Netanyahu, to meet the president, etc., supporting them. So for me, this was really a major shift. It was nothing of de-escalation, nothing of restraint. Anything could go, basically. And that was also something that triggered me a lot, that like, okay, it's we can really make a difference here. So I think that the first major protest went there, it was in front of the European Commission. And ever since, yeah, there have been sit-ins, they have been growing. The train stations are regularly a site of demonstrations. Of course, the European institutions, I think no week has passed without some form of disruptive protest. And then there are some smaller groups that actually also go into, we are building contacts with them, go to certain companies like Starbucks, like Zara, and do Carrefour is a big one here, of course, and they do major actions there, although they are often, driven away by the police, who is definitely taking the side each time of those major companies.
Yes, I think... if we look at how those protests are, how much is being done, it's just really amazing, actually. Honestly, it's a sad situation, without a doubt, but it's really beautiful also to see how many people keep on going to the streets and keep on mobilizing and really just don't stop. And I think, I hope, honestly, that it continues. The strength of the people that keep on going and organizing these demonstrations, whether they are small or big, it's really something that honestly amazes me, how they keep on doing it. I know that a lot of Palestinians are also involved, and I think that they are that much more emotionally connected and involved. I think if when I go to those protests, I always feel connected to the people around me because we are all there for the same cause. But at the same time, once you leave, my experience was actually quite bad because the police was waiting. It was an announced demonstration. The authorities knew that there would be a demonstration. It was a big one in Brussels. And once we left, we took a side way to leave the demonstration. The police stopped us because we had Palestinian flags. And apparently you can't walk around in Brussels with a Palestinian flag. So for me, the moment that you step out of the demonstration and that you're confronted to something like that, it really makes you angry, actually. And you're really hurt and disappointed, like, are we really being treated this way? Why can't you just wave a Palestinian flag? It's just, yeah. And then you go away with this angry sensation. And I can't imagine how Palestinians must feel if they are confronted, and I know they are confronted to it, also in Belgium, in other countries. That makes, it gives you another feeling when you leave those demonstrations, honestly. It's this contrast between on the one side, this connection with the people that are there, and on the other side, the repression at the end.
There's a lot of connections between different movements challenging the injustices in our world today. I'm thinking of the actions that Extinction Rebellion did in the Netherlands, for example, to support Palestine. Or I'm thinking about protests in Bolivia of indigenous people to support Palestine. Or the connection between Black Lives Matter in the United States opposing police violence. And now we see this sort of link between the mobilization for Palestine and the Black Lives Matter movement. Or in France, some of the same organizations that were mobilizing for justice for Nail that were also involved in the Palestine work. Maybe if you could share a bit about like how that plays out in the Belgian context, because I realize that there's a lot of very important local issues in the Brussels context for sure, where you have like a lot of economic discrepancy between immigrant areas. You have a lot of between immigrant areas and more affluent, you know, European white neighborhoods. You also have this colonial history of Belgium that's extreme and still has not been fully addressed, you know, in the Congo, for example. So there's a lot of like connections that happen in these spaces, I would imagine. And there's particular conversations in the Belgian context that I would imagine both of you have had, both in the university and also in the protests, discussing with others. What are some like conversations you've had or interesting exchanges you've had with people in this context of mobilization? Because we all know very well that, yeah, we're protesting for Palestine, but the network of people on the streets are also engaged in other issues.
Yeah, if I look at with whom we are organizing, what coalition is built? Well, I don't think it's really a coalition, but I do see the support coming from a lot of different angles, from queers, radical left, Jewish people who are very vocal, or some groups against what very critical of the Zionist project. So you encounter a lot of sentiments, and of course Brussels is hyper diverse. Then you need to think that like you see the most critical parts of Europe are Ireland, for historic reasons, Spain also because I think they have a left-wing government, and then the Nordic countries have been critical. Belgium is also among the more critical ones. I don't think this is because they have such courageous politicians, but there is a historic legacy of Belgium, of the Flemish people, but also on the French side, the Flemish have long been identifying a little bit with Palestinian. It's only recently that the Flemish nationalists have shifted to support of Israel. So it's a different political constellation compared to several other European countries. So yeah, there is on the one side like the activists, you see them, people who are more seasoned activists, and you have people who are more into this particular issue, I think. Then in Belgium, the situation is also a bit different from, say, the European level. So it's a very layered sort of field of powers we are navigating. We are doing this at the universities. The French-speaking universities in Belgium have been more outspoken against Israel than the Flemish universities. So you're constantly thinking like, okay, what's going to happen next, actually? Who is going to give support? Our university was the first to call for a ceasefire. Now it's the last to actually investigate whether we should also go into an academic boycott. So yeah, it's a bit of a clusterfuck, I would say, but sorry, pardon my French.
I can also only speak from our experience at the VUB, because I haven't been organizing something outside of our university. But I truly feel like we have a really a lot of different people coming together. And we also really try to get as many Palestinians also that study at the university or not actually that study at other universities in Belgium to try to get in contact with them and really try to have this solid base within our network, that we don't only get these ideas for teachings or actions from our perspective as non-Palestinians, but also really include that Palestinian voice in the organization also, and not only in being invited as a speaker, for example, but also from within the network in the organization of events.
What you do see is that I must say that I think the most people who are most invested in organizing are people who are more aware and sensitive to this situation or this position of being more marginalized in society on whatever front, I think, or have experience in fighting for the more marginalized, whether this is on economic basis, on sexual basis, on gender basis, or whatsoever, I must say, and now most pressingly on racial or religious basis, definitely something that triggers this. So we've been organizing with socialist youth organizations, with We Decolonize the VUB, our university. Those are the organizations most involved.
It seems that there's this huge disconnection, well, it's obvious, between Western institutions at the United Nations level or the EU level and what is being expressed on the streets. The places where we see the most significant protests are also the same places where institutions of power have been backing the Netanyahu-led Israeli government. And that's very striking. And I think this will have an impact for many years, this huge disconnection between the discourse of power and the discourse of an unprecedented amount of mobilizations on the streets. And I don't think any of us know where this will go, but it's a significant historical shift. So I still would be really interested in hearing any of your thoughts about this, because it seems that despite all this rhetoric around international law and conventions for human rights, this is not applied in the case of Palestine.
Yes, I agree that there is a huge discrepancy between those institutions and people who are in power and normal people, actually. And we do see the same thing at the university, because if you look at the mobilization within universities and how the top of the university actually remains quite either silent or half deaf for what we are actually asking for, you see it clearly that there is this difference. And I think the main reason why is because we are not in that position where we have to look at the conflict as a conflict. We can recognize it as being this genocide. There is this oppressor. I think people really don't buy the bullshit anymore. We don't buy the propaganda anymore. Some people have not done so for a long time. Others are just now realizing, okay, what is this Israeli propaganda machine? And what is this information that is given to us? And I think that social media in that sense has been really a very powerful tool also, because I feel like the other times I remember also in Jerusalem, and when the buildings, the homes of Mohammed al-Kurd and others were being demolished, you also had these videos, and social media also really opened up the eyes of a lot of people on what is going on. But I feel like this time it has been so much more, and people have seen really with their own eyes. Actually, we are following just this genocide with our own eyes from our couch. And I think that is really one of those factors that switched actually the minds of a lot of people that before that really didn't captivate actually what Israel was, how much they were lying to us. Whether it be about not willingly targeting specific buildings, schools, hospitals, or other things.
I think it is very important to, and now it has become common sense, that the Israeli the project of the State of Israel in the West has been very much an elite project. And this becomes ever more apparent today. Of course, there's a popular basis in Israel itself, and there's a lot of answers to how to deal with that. But if you look at the support that is coming from the West now, it's not coming from the people. It's coming from governments. And there may be a lot of people who are sort of indifferent of what our government is doing in foreign affairs and foreign relations, because that's not what ultimately makes you inform your decision at the ballot box for most people, I think. But I do think it has become very clear and commonsensical almost that what is going on cannot be justified by any moral terms. And the fact that our leaders are supporting Israel and its so-called right to defend itself is very much just, that because we are historic friends, because we have our economic interests there, as Europe, as your individual European countries, that's why we support them. But it's not because of any moral, you cannot claim any moral basis anymore for what Israel has been doing over the past year. And everybody who has been following any of the news, even though media outlets are trying to side with Israel, trying to do this both-sidedism narrative, trying to shape false equivalences, we do see what's going on and who is suffering most and who is breaking each moral boundary. I think more than ever this has become clear to the wider population as well.
Thanks so much for both taking the time to chat today.